Together for the Gospel / T4G is a conference that just finished its fourth time of meeting together. So they meet every other year, which means 12, 10, 8, 6 would have been the first one. And it is a conference hosted by Mark Dever and C.J. Mahaney and Al Mohler and Ligon Duncan. So you've got a kind of charismatic, two Southern Baptists and a Presbyterian who are the hosts of the conference. And then previously they've also invited some other speakers at the first three conferences. In addition to those four guys speaking, they also had R.C. Sproul, John MacArthur, and John Piper. This year was the first time that MacArthur and Sproul were unable to come. John Piper was there and he spoke, and then they had three other younger guys. Kevin DeYoung, who's a Presbyterian pastor in Michigan. Matt Chandler, who's a Acts 29 pastor of a church in Dallas, Texas. And then David Platt. I'm not sure if they're Southern Baptist or not. Could be. Probably Baptist-ish. Baptist-like. He's pastor of a church somewhere in the South, Mississippi or Alabama. Must be Alabama, Birmingham. So there were nine speakers and nine big sessions. And the theme for this year's conference was Together for the Underestimated Gospel. And one of the things that I actually appreciated, I definitely appreciated, and that's going to get us started with our testimonies tonight, is that in addition to those nine speakers, I think all of whom have books published and are well-known nationally, at least in their respective circles, in addition to those speakers, most of the main sessions also included one or two testimonies from a variety of backgrounds and salvation stories, people that you really wouldn't have known ahead of time. They were not the world-class speakers and preachers. They were just people who had been saved, and again, I forget how many there were, maybe six or seven of them who gave their testimonies. And it was really encouraging. Obviously, there was a common strain throughout all of their testimonies. Each one of them finished by saying, don't ever underestimate the gospel. But from those whose parents had abandoned them, to those who grew up in a Christian home in India, to those who grew up in a Christian home thinking that they were saved in the United States, and everywhere in between on that spectrum. But those testimonies were an encouragement because when you hear someone testify, give witness to what God has done in their life, that often is a stimulation to seek God's work in our own lives, if not in the exact same ways, then perhaps in similar ways. Tonight, I don't think any of the seven are going to stand up and give a testimony of their salvation this past week at T4G. But hopefully, as they have been encouraged, then they can encourage back to the rest of the body. Jonathan asked me during the meet and greet if we were going to just invite guys up as the Spirit leads or if we were going to make everybody come up here and have like a panel discussion. So this is what we're going to do. And that is, I'm going to say in just a moment, when you're ready, come on up and give it. If we get done here in the next 5 minutes, because everybody only takes 45 seconds, then we're going to make everybody come up here, and Jonathan's going to ask you questions. All right. So I am not planning on going until the end, depending on how much time there is, because my mouth gets to be open a lot. So there were eight of us who went. Chuck is the only one who's not here tonight, I believe. So then there's seven of us. So who's going to be first?
Okay, well, hey, we had a great time. Sean said, nine really, really powerful speakers. It was an awesome time. It was my first time to one of these. I had never been to a Shepherd's Conference or Resolved or anything of those. And when I was asked If I had been to one of these before, it took me a while to think. I think so, but nothing of this caliber. You know, I had been at Awana, you know, those things every year with Awana, those little day-long things. Ruth Ann and I went to I think it was Focus on the Family, they call it the Truth Project. We went to that in Orlando, Florida, which was really cool. Had a lot of special speakers there. But never had I been to something that was as powerful and as enriching as something that we went through this week. 3 days of intense learning about just what it means to be on fire for the gospel. 9 very powerful speakers, really focusing on pastors, because there were over 8,000 people there in this stadium, the size of, I don't know, Comcast Arena, or even better, 8,000 pastors. So it was amazing. And they really focused their talking and their messages on things that pastors would be concerned about. Like the first one, C.J. Mahaney, talked about discouragement. You know, they're up there at the podium every Sunday and, you know, wondering if their message is really getting through to their congregation. And Monday morning, they become their own quarterback, right? A little, oh, did I do well? Did I do well? But CJ came back and just said, hey, regardless of what you went through and how you're feeling, that God is sovereign. You know, he knows what you're going through, and he will help you. He will encourage you. He lifts you up through the messages that come from his word. I don't remember the verse in the passage that he was talking about, but it was really, really poignant, because I think probably at least half, if not all of them, probably everybody gets discouraged every once in a while. Even us. Because that was one of the big things about this. I'm not a pastor. I'm not a, you know, I'm kind of scared out of my wits right now talking to everybody, but there were more than just pastors there. Just lowly old people like some of us. And we were all encouraged by that as well. I think we were encouraged by every message that was there. Not only CJ's, but John Piper, David Platt, who gave a huge, I mean, this pastor from Alabama, right, gave this message on missions. And I had a little run-in with Dave afterwards talking with his, and then Sean as well, because it was amazing. It was amazing how he was challenging churches, challenging pastors to encourage their people to think about reaching lost souls for Christ, going into the world and evangelizing those that might not have an opportunity to hear the gospel. And it was so powerful for a lot that actually at the end there was a standing ovation. But what was really cool about that standing ovation, it wasn't about that speaker, who was really dynamic. It was about what God is doing and what God can do if we think about going out and sharing the gospel to unreached people. But that was one, that was another one that was really great. Just the whole time was very enriching. Another cool thing that I got out of this when we were sitting at a dinner table at a restaurant on Monday night before we actually got into this, it started on Tuesday in the afternoon. So we went out to dinner Monday night after getting there from the airport. And Jonathan spoke up and said, hey, you guys, and I think 5 or 6 of us were around the table, had this heap of chips, right? We have to talk about that heap of chips. But Jonathan asked a question. He said, what do you guys want to get out of this? What do you want to get out of this time that we're here for these next 4 days? I kind of wrestled and thought, what do I want to get out of it? I want to learn. I want to grow. I want to see just see where God leads me in this. And so that was a good answer, I thought. And then Dave comes up and he says, I just want to get to know Dan better. I was afraid. I thought, no. But seriously, I got to know Dave better. He got to know me better. We had a wonderful time. I mean, we wrestled, this David Platt guy, we had a little bit of a jousting back and forth walking back to the hotel, but It was all in great fun and excitement because we were both growing and learning. I was, pretty much. What else? Just overall, I think I grew a lot. I really did. I learned a lot. I recognized that even though this was for pastors, or so they said, every one of us can get encouraged and more excited about the gospel, more excited about what it means to love Jesus Christ, what it means to know what he did on the cross and to really live that. And so for all of those messages, even though it was, he talked about focusing on pastors, I got a lot out of it too. In 2 years, April 8th and to the 10th in 2014, they're going to have it again. And one last one I did want to share was, not only were men there, I said 8,000 people, there were at least hundreds, literally hundreds of women, wives of those that were there, encouraging their husbands, understand, wanting to be part of all that, women that might be involved in different ministries in their church. I even saw a breakout group just for the women. There was a panel of ladies up at the front and a couple hundred women in the back and in the audience just listening to that panel. So I don't know when that was, if it was the day before or whatever, but not only men, but women. So April 8th through 10th, I would encourage all of us to think about how we can, it's not going to be underestimated, I'm sure, but it's something else, but how we can think about maybe taking a week out of our time to learn and grow about the God and know what it means to be together for the gospel. So that's about it. All right.
You can clap, that's fine.
This is weird. Oh, good. As we were walking out of the Louisville Bat Factory, I had two bats because the tour guide was gracious enough to give me two because I said, I have two boys, what do I do? And he goes, here, take this. So as I'm walking out, I'm taking them and doing this all over. And I'm going, you know, I wonder why my boys whack each other all the time with sticks or other things and the apple doesn't fall far. But that also, 3 weeks ago, this kind of relates to it. 3 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, Sean gave a sermon on how children, or we as sons and daughters, follow our father. And we do as our father does, or should. And in that conversation with my son, with Aaron, I said, now that we're at the Boer's farm, why do you muck out the stalls? And he says, because you do. And that was incredibly encouraging to me as to who I put myself around, who I emulate, who I look up to here on this earth, and then how much I focus on the Lord. And going to the Shepherd's Conference, the Together for the Gospel, I've done that a few times, going to the Together for the Gospel was just that. It was, okay, I want to put myself around men that I can emulate, men that I can watch, and I can say, I want to be like that. I want to do that. I want to know those things, but not just knowledge-wise, but to be challenged. And there were quite a few things that challenged me. Singing was a huge part of it. And having 8,000 men and women singing praises to our great and sovereign God was huge. There were many times that I got choked up. It's like, okay, because God is so great, and it makes me feel so small, which is where I need to be. Because it was all to God's glory, and all these people were looking to Him, looking to God, and praising Him and giving Him glory for everything. And it's unique when you get this many people together. It's very, very powerful. the speakers, the next part of it, was also challenging. Not that I grew up in church. You go to church and you're like-minded to a fault, where nobody challenges each other. Nobody asks questions that need to be asked. Nobody talks through things. It's just, oh, we all agree on this and we'll move along. And even seeing the speakers, there were panel discussions. And during the panel discussions, they would challenge each other. It wasn't just, oh, let's just talk about this topic because we all agree. It's, okay, well, why do you think that? Or, I don't agree with you, was even said a couple times. And that was because they all come from Southern Baptist, Baptist, Presbyterian, almost Pentecostal, C.J. Mahaney. And it's just a lot of different backgrounds come together. And I really appreciate that, okay, why do we believe what we believe and back it up? And not just, okay, we all agree, let's move along. And all of us as the men that got together, challenged as we drove around, as I drove around with Jim and Chris and Ben on the bus, because we took public transportation every day to Indiana and back, which was interesting. We got called Caucasians for the very first time by a black man on the bus, and it was really interesting. He actually apologized. It was funny. But just those conversations that went on were pushing, making me think, making each one of us think, asking the questions that don't normally get asked. What was your favorite part? What part challenged you? What's difficult going on in your ministry right now that maybe that related to? And getting those wheels going, okay, it's not just move along. And then I bought a meal plan ticket, which was also interesting. It was very good. Not necessarily the food part, but to be able to sit with men from all over the country. And while I was waiting in line to get my meal ticket, which was a very disorganized thing, it took us about half an hour to get our meal tickets as we got into line. But so I had a great conversation with a guy from South Carolina. He was a new pastor. He had been there for a little over a year, I think a year and a half. And he talked about how he came to a church after a pastor that had been there for 25 years never preached the gospel once. And he came into this church and did not know any of this. And I don't know if I think the pastor retired and he'd been there a long time. And he said it was a huge challenge to get these people, the congregation of the church, and they're challenging him on, okay, what does all this mean? Because they're getting convicted. The gospel changes you, and it can't help it, but you fight it if you've never heard it. And to go to a church, he was out of Southern Seminary, which is gospel, pound it. And to go to a church that doesn't, it would be huge. And it was right after the C.J. Mahaney sermon on discouragement. And I asked him, how'd that sermon hit you? And he said, I was in tears for most of it. So to hear those kind of stories, plus success stories, great pastors from all over. I talked to one from Pennsylvania, a couple from Pennsylvania, from Florida, from North Carolina, from Colorado. And just these men that just love the Lord and have the same focus, the same look at the gospel, that the gospel is all. Christ is all. But what I came away with, especially from the those who gave their testimony, the first gentleman who came out and gave his testimony had a stocking cap on. He looked kind of like a gangster. But he was the one that grew up with his grandmother as a prostitute. His grandfather committed suicide. His mom, forget what she did. But he basically lived on the street most of his life, and he just finished planting two churches in different parts of the world, I believe. And it was incredible to hear what God has done and what God can do through his underestimated gospel, and how much it impressed me, how much impressed upon me, how much I underestimate what God can do, thinking I can do so much and God needs me and he doesn't need me at all. And he just uses me, and that I can be available for him to use. So that's it. Oh, one more thing. I need to say how much I appreciate my family and Lila for all that they did. I left going away from a house that wasn't finished and ready to rent. And the people were moving in this weekend. They moved in yesterday. And they got everything ready, did all the stuff, and huge appreciation for my family. So thank you. Oh, there. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My turn. Wow. It was a great week. And I would echo the sentiment of Dan to say that if you have the opportunity to go next time, it would be well worth your while. I think the number one thing that I came out from the week was a sense of gratitude. Gratitude for my own salvation. Gratitude for the church that we have, for the pastors that we have. That was, I think, a thread that God just brought out of every session that we had, all nine sessions. There was this kind of thread that God was speaking to me about gratitude. And if you have a chance to go online, there's great resources that come out of this conference. So if you have a chance, go to t4g.org and listen to these sessions. It's not just one, and you can only listen to it if you were there, but they have, I think they're all online. They're going to come out, from what I hear from Bob Coughlin, who was the one that was leading in worship, they're going to come out with an album that is based on the singing, the live singing that was done there for this year and the previous conference. So that'll be fantastic. It was quite the experience to be in this arena and have 8,000 people singing with all their might to the Lord. And usually what Bob would do, he was leading on the piano. There was just the one instrument, the piano, and he would usually go a cappella without playing for the last verse. And that was awesome, just to hear the reverberation of praises to God. So Dan was my roommate, and I learned this actually later in our stay, because apparently he was assigned to me, and I didn't realize this until later, because I would go to bed and he wasn't there. And then I would wake up in the morning and there's just this big lump in the bed, the other bed. And so, well, that's not true. He was a big lump, but he would stay up late. I'd get up early. And so we would miss each other that way. But, we had a great conversation on Wednesday night after David Platt, spoke about on missions, and I learned his heart, for missions. And, you know, we share a little bit of that. So, that was great. It was great to get to know people, you know, during, like, Ron said, I was also on the meal plan thing. So kind of forced to go to these meals because I wanted to get my money's worth. I didn't want to lose out on that. So, but I actually sat down with a pastor from Canada, and you know, he started to explain his ministry in Northern Ontario, and I said, I was born in Ontario, and so, wow, you know, so we were able to discuss things, and I learned a little bit about his ministry. So I think that's all I have to say. So.
Okay, I have to fill in a little bit of the Caucasian story here. So So Ron and I were too cheap to stay in the nice hotels around the conference center, so we had found a Days Inn in southern Indiana across the river about 3 miles away. And to get back and forth, we would just take the city bus. And the first time the bus pulled up to pick us up, it was a lady with a nicer tan than we have driving, and she looked at me and she said, "Indiana?" I said, "Yes, that's where we're going." She said, "Okay, come on board." So we've been taking the bus a couple days, and one night we were going home, and a gentleman, an African-American gentleman, got on board, probably in his 60s, 70s, had a cane. You could tell he was walking with a limp. And he just stood, four of us are sitting there in the front of the bus, and it's one situation where four of us are not the same, four of us are different on the bus. And he's just standing there, and I'm thinking, well, yeah, he could have taken a seat in the back, but for some reason he stood there. So finally I reached over and I just tugged on his sleeve. I said, "Would you like to have a seat?" And he kind of acted surprised, like, "You're not supposed to be talking to my kind." But he said, "No, thanks. That's okay. I'll be fine." And then a few minutes later, he turned around and he said, "Are you guys all from that conference going on down there?" And then we said, "Yes, we are." And he goes, "Well, forgive me for saying, but I'm just not used to seeing Caucasians on this bus here." He says, and "Does that offend you? Please forgive me if, Caucasian offends you." But we laughed. We said, no. And then he came around and shook all of our hands. And when he realized that we were pastors from the church at the conference, he came and shook our hand and said, "I just need all the help I can get." But anyhow, and as he got off again, he apologized for calling us Caucasians. And we just laughed. We said, "It's all right. We're all God's children." But, even in little ways like that, did we share the gospel? No. Did we live out the gospel in a small way? I hope so. Perhaps that will stick in his mind to say, black, white, whatever color we are, we're all precious in God's sight. But that's the Caucasian story, but that was a good time. It was, as the guy said, just an amazing time. For me, the fellowship of our brothers from TEC was tremendous. To be able to go there and to see the diversity of great men from various different theological persuasions. Obviously, when it comes to Reformed theology, we're all on the same page. When it comes to how we do church, other secondary issues, we differ greatly. And it was okay for everybody to have their theological persuasions. There wasn't any fighting. There was no separating one from another based on those issues. But we came together for the gospel. All of the debates, the sessions, the panel discussions, you could tell the guys were going to hold their turf and defend their positions and their views, but at the same time respect and recognize that that was also brother in Christ at the other end of the table having those discussions. There is something powerful about being in a room full of 8,000 people who all love the Lord as much as you do, to know. For me, just to think, especially in our part of the country where it does seem hard to find a lot of like-minded churches, to realize that, across our country and even across the world, God is faithful to be building his church. So that was pretty special. Those panel discussions were a lot of fun to hear them discuss. One of them, help me with the topic again, guys, was on the one on celebrity. It was the celebrity pastor. And what was the tagline on that? Do you remember? It was the celebrity pastor and something about the dangers in that fact. And all of the guys up there, were discussing that, that the danger in not lifting up men and making them out to be these celebrities. One of the new guys they had there, David Platt, he actually, when they asked him his thoughts, you could tell he was visibly uncomfortable being up there and even being thought of as a celebrity. He said, "This really makes me uncomfortable." He says there's already a tendency, when you get a big church, for your heart to go that direction. So he was very unhappy being up in the panel just because of the tendency to that, give you the fat head. But that just spoke to the kind of humility that we saw in these guys all. So they bent over backwards to reassure and to encourage all the pastors that were out there that was where ministry was happening. And as Tim mentioned, they encouraged all of us to, again, make sure that we're very appreciative of the pastors that God has given us in our local churches, because that's where ministry is occurring. The typical day's session started at 9 in the morning. They didn't let us out typically till 9:45, 10 o'clock, and then we had the after-time discussions as we're walking back to the hotel. So typically we didn't get back to bed till about midnight just because of all the conversations going on. Found out that Ron makes a pretty good roommate, but we shared a hotel room together. And again, just good times of discussion. It was even neat to see how just our connections, so RTEC, the eight of us, Chuck went back and picked up Ian. He brought, I don't know, what, six, seven of his guys with him. My son Chris over in Spokane, and he brought his teaching pastor with him. So we basically had a little band of about 16 guys always sitting together in the arena. So, again, just the camaraderie, the fellowship, the like-mindedness, the encouragement, the great teaching, challenging teaching. Got to hear John Piper's, what he would call his last preaching message like that, you know, as a pastor, because he'll be retiring here in about a year. So just lots of special things going on there. The diversity among ourselves, we would be talking on the way home and say, well, what was your favorite message? And, you know, I'd say my favorite message was this one. And then Sean would say, well, no, that he'd have a totally different one for totally different reasons. So just to see how God was working uniquely in each of us, how the different topics hit our hearts. But I would urge anybody who would like to think about it, if you were thinking about this time but you didn't quite do it, you really ought to do it next time. It is a special time. It does cost, but it's well worth the cost. And just had a very, very good time.
Well, I've been to a few of these things like this. And I started off being fairly cynical about it, okay? for those of you who know me, you know, take a shot if I can. And I have been a part of Grace Community's Shepherd's Conference, and there is a definite agenda that they want to kind of make people conform to. And it always makes you nervous when you're part of that and you're given responsibility to make that agenda go. You may be doing that, but maybe everybody else isn't doing that kind of thing. So you're saying the right thing, but it really is not being done. This conference was a conference, not maybe, I don't know what you would call a meeting where you're going to try to make everybody conform, but it definitely was not that. It was a conference of like-minded people who had very distinct opinions, and it was clear that they had those opinions, held to them, and yet saw the universal church. And to see that demonstrated the way it was really, really good. And kind of the funny thing that started, you know, we what time did we go to the stupid airport? 3 o'clock in the morning we had to leave. So we kind of slept at Sunday night and then get up at 2. Tim has to do that tonight because that's the same flight that he's going to fly to Arkansas or Alabama tonight. But by the time you do that and you get there on Monday, you're exhausted and you kind of fumble around and you want to eat because you're hungry because you've been on the plane. And then we went to bed. And Sean got to, he was really tired. And so he got to experience my snoring, which kept him up probably till what? Before you fixed it. 3 in the morning, he tried earplugs that weren't working. Then he tried his iPhone with earbuds with white noise, and he kept cranking it up and finally got it adjusted where he could go to sleep. And luckily, Jonathan was immune to it, or at least was tired enough where I didn't keep him on. But that's a warning to you guys. I guess you and Dan snore, but you must be, you know, in sync, so... But so that was kind of humorous. And then the singing was, for me, the most emotional part. It was very difficult when you get 3 choruses done and then there'd be that a cappella part. And, I mean, it just was like, whoa, you know, and it was really good. And there were a few girly songs, but most of them were really good. And it was, I mean, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God is like, whoa, you know. And probably the highlight in the singing for me, because it's the little song we sing every Saturday night when we do our Sabbath dinner, the the doxology. And the whole conference ended, and Moeller came up, and he was kind of trying to tie it together. And he had gone over. I watched him get off the stage and go down and talk to Coughlin to get him to come up again. And he came up, and the whole place sang that, and that was the end. And it was like, whoa. And it was really good. So it was interesting to see that they're going to make an album of that. All these guys are celebrity pastors, no doubt about it, okay? They're writing books. The publishers are after them. That is going on in their lives. I mean, Matt Chandler has a church of 10,000 people in Dallas, Texas, you know, so, and duh, you know. And the watching them kind of have a preach-off kind of thing, and yet each of them was different, and they were hitting a different note, and they did tie it to the just absolute underestimated gospel, what it can do. We all underestimate it. Well, I can't tell my friend, you know, Jesus died for your sins. That's just stupid, you know. He's not going to want to hear that. And it is, you know, when God's behind it, there is nothing that he can't do. And that was preached over and over. The panel discussions were interesting. The favorite for me was Sean knew I would like this guy, so when they had one breakout session, and they had a lot of different things, so you had to choose one to go to, and they have them different hotel ballrooms, and I would assume there would be, well, this one I went to probably had 500 people in the room, and it was this guy Carl Truman, who's a professor at Westminster, which is the Presbyterian Seminary in Pennsylvania. And he's quite acerbic, but right on target, as far as I could tell, anyway. And so we went to his breakout session, and he was saying all kinds of things about the celebrity pastors, and he didn't want to come to this thing, but he did see that it was very different than what he thought. He thought it was going to be trying to cram an agenda down, but it was coming together for the gospel and for the bigger church. And yet he is, you know, incredibly strong. He's an OPC Presbyterian. He's from Scotland, has a small church of 100 that he pastors and teaches at the seminary. He was invited to be on the celebrity pastors seminar, and it was really good because he's sitting there with all these celebrities. And he made the suggestion that the next time they ought to just invite 8 people out of the audience that are pastoring churches to speak, and then have the panels to encourage most of the people in the audience, because most of those people are like us. They have, you know, a small church, and the guy week in and week out has to preach to them, and to see how encouraging that would be. I don't think it's going to happen, but it was very interesting to see him challenge them that way. For me, these things are always, and it was the same way at Grace Community, it's the people you see, the new people you meet, the people you haven't seen for a while run into you and you see them. One of the big ones for me was I met a kid that I knew in the 7th grade. His dad was in our Sunday school when we moved up into that. It ended up his dad had really bad diabetes, and the first discipleship group that we had in our Sunday school, this kid's dad came, and his prayer request was that he could choose how far for the doctor to cut his leg off in the next week in the operation. And the guy that had been assigned to be the pastor, he like fell out of his chair because he's waiting, you know, pray that I'm strong in the word and everything. And it ended up, this guy ended up having to get parts of him hacked away, and he eventually died. When did he die? Like Ed died probably 5 years ago. Yeah. And here I see this kid that I've known now. My goodness, he's probably 25 years old now, so whatever that is. And I saw him, and I kind of recognized his face, and I looked over at Sean because Sean was talking to his childhood friend at another table. And I said, is that anyone? Yeah. And here's this kid, you know, grown up. And then he's here with another bunch of pastors from Wisconsin because he's migrated over there. So you see the threads, how God works it all. And we're always, you know, I get in the elevator and I say, you having fun yet? And, you know, just striking up conversations with all kinds of people. So are you going to tell about Dever? Okay. Well, I don't want to take it away if you're going to tell that story of meeting that guy. Oh, okay. So Mark Dever is a guy that's written a lot of books about church government and, you know, how you should do church, little pamphlets that were given away at the thing. He's moderated a lot of these things. He's been a guest at Grace Community's Shepherd's Conference. He has Capitol Hill Baptists in Washington. It's about a 600-member church. He's been there for quite a while now. He's a big-time egghead. I think he got his PhD in Europe somewhere. But he doesn't come across that way. He's very down to earth. And he talks and says that he has these sessions. Every time they do something, he gets the pastoral staff and the deacons and the elders and gets them all in the room, and they have a big rehash. How are we doing? How should we change this? What's happening? Kind of like our men-to-men meeting, as we've talked about elders and all this stuff as we've gone ahead with this. And both Sean and I have talked and said, man, that's a great idea, but we've also been involved enough to know, well, maybe they're saying it and they're not doing it. So it so happened that we're standing next to the elevator, and these elevators are very slow in our hotel, so you had room if somebody came up. And this guy comes up, and I looked at him, and I said, you having fun yet? He said, oh, yeah, we're really having a good time. And I said, where are you from? And, well, I think I told him. I said, well, we're from Washington. And he cut his eyebrows raised, and I said, well, Washington over on the East Coast. And then he said, well, I'm from Santa Cruz, but I was raised in Santa Cruz, but now I'm in Washington, D.C. And I said, well, do you go to Capitol Hill? And he kind of, well, yeah. And he says, actually, I'm the, what do you call himself, the associate pastor? I'm the associate pastor. And I said, really? And I were you listening to the, because you were standing like right there. And then the elevator came right at that time. And there's like eight people in the elevator, and we're wanting to jump this guy and find out if they really do this. So we get into the elevator, and we continue the conversation. Sean picks it up and just flat asks him, do you do that? And he said, not only do we do that, but we're doing that every night of this conference. We all get together and rehash what we think, how it could have been done better, what we're getting out of it, you know, what do we think about it. And so we saw that proven there. Now, to make a long story short, we're in the airport in Lexington to come back home, the flight going out, and I see two guys sitting over in the corner, and we have to wait 2 hours, so I go up to them. Looks to me, because this one guy had a big fat book that Dever had written under his arm, and he looked like he was a Marine because he had the Marine haircut and had his backpack, you know, camouflage kind of thing, and I'm looking at him, and I said, do you go to his church? And he said, well, I did. And then the older guy that was sitting next to him, he kind of looked at me, and I said, hi, did you have fun too? And he said, oh, yeah, I had fun. And so then I explained, you know, I'm from Washington, and we've come with these nine guys or whatever, and I show them over there. And he says, well, I'm from Fallbrook, California. You know where that is? And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. I said, the company I own in National City sells you the seals that goes in your water pumps. And he looks at me and says, how can you have a company in Washington and live, you know, and have in National City and live up there? And so I explained to him and say, oh, that's really cool. And so then I said, well, did you go to Dever's church? And he said, yes, I was stationed in Anacostia, which is across the Potomac, where they keep the presidential plane and all that stuff. And the son had gone for like 3 years there. Then the dad says, I went to visit him because I had to see my grandkids, and I stayed 3 weeks with him. And the first night they went, it was like a midweek Bible study. And as soon as the people in the church knew he was a pastor, or even a leader, they look for people that are leaders in the church, they immediately invited him to the session that night to assess what they'd done in that meeting. And they said every time that he went to a service, they invited him to be in the meeting just as a visiting pastor to critique that. So not only, you know, is this guy saying he does it in a big way. I mean, somebody visits and invites him into the inner sanctum to critique him. And I thought that spoke volumes for what Dever writes and what he does. And that was very encouraging. Again, the best time is always getting to know the people you go with or getting to know new people on different levels. But I did focus on Dan, and I because we've had interesting talks about a lot of different things, and we were in different fellowship groups and at GBC, so we wanted to make sure that, you know, hey, you know where I'm coming from, because I do say a lot of wild things just to get the thing. And so the previous night I'd stayed up to 2:30, and then Dan and I stayed up to 2:30 the next night. So I came back sick, and probably because I didn't get enough sleep and behave myself. But other than that, it was no problem. But it was really good. And it's the thing you really realize is the church is universal, okay? There's a lot of believers out there. And sometimes where they're trapped isn't freeing for them, or they feel down and stuff. I mean, like your story about that guy that cried because of the, you know, being depressed in your thing. It's cool to have these things and to see different people, and so it was really, really good. And I'm still a little bit of a cynic about all the big deals, but always, even in the Shepherd's Conferences, the individual time and the singing is always more powerful. So, really good.
Yeah, I have to, because I don't know if Sean would, I have to give you the rest of the story on the elevator thing. And what Dave conveniently skipped over was that the topic of our conversation when we chanced upon this associate pastor from Capitol Hill. And so walking out of the hotel room, we said it was just around the corner to the elevator, Sean and I were talking about Devers' talk. And yeah, I won't give you all the details of it, but just taken out of its context, it might have sounded a bit critical of Dever. Which we don't want to, you know, just come to this conference here, world-class preaching, as C.J. Mahaney says, and then have roast pastor over breakfast, right? That's not the intent, but taken by itself, it could definitely sound like we're having our own little, afterglow debriefing session.
I was vigorously disagreeing with something that Dever had said as we walked out of the room, yes. In context, it could have sounded like I was vigorously disagreeing.
I was trying to state it nicely. Well, and then Sean and I actually picked up that conversation at Hard Rock Cafe two nights later because we didn't get to finish. I mean, because. So here we are in front of the elevator, and Sean is kind of animated talking because he was, going for it. That's my Sean impersonation. And I'm standing there listening, and Dave's here listening. This guy walks up. So you having a good time? Talking to this guy. Oh, yeah. I guess. So fortunately, the volume of our conversation had dipped just a little bit when this. I don't know how much he heard. But anyway, he was gracious enough, and apparently it's part of their culture to maybe on occasion agree or disagree vigorously. Do you guys want to hear like some of the singing? Yeah, so I'll just give you a tiny bit here, if I can. There's a little bit more, but so I only play that because a few people have mentioned some of the singing, and I never had an iPhone before to record that. So a couple things that I learned, a couple takeaways. Obviously the time just spent hanging out with the guys, my ineptitude with the iPhone ought to be testimony to one piece. That is, wherever you land on the Mac versus PC debate is not nearly as important as the conversation, right? So, I mean, I do have an iPhone, I have a MacBook, but I'm by no means like a diehard Mac-only guy necessarily. But the opportunity to, like, spar with Dan Hoagland is just too delicious to pass up. So, yeah, he is funny. But two highlights from even that discussion happened at the airport while Dan, well, I get, no, let's see. Dan, yeah, Dan and Tim were across the way, and I was sitting next to Ron, and that's when Dave was over talking to the guys who had visited Capitol Hill, and you want me to use a different? There's lots of examples. Okay. We can use one from when you were wide awake. Well, we considered the trip complete because we actually got Tim Ratzlaff, who's also very funny, to talk a little smack. So two things happened that I didn't say any of it, and it just typified the whole spectrum right there. Like, Dan utters in disgust, "Mac is like, that's a vegetable." No, he said apple. Yeah, Macintosh is, yeah. Because actually, Ron said, "Do you know what a Macintosh is?" He goes, "No, apple is like a vegetable." And I just kind of let the words hang out there for a second. Said, "If you're going to talk smack, you might want to get your facts straight just a little." And then Tim shortly thereafter said, with that, you know, wry little smile on his face, "I used to have an Apple IIe, and then I grew up and got a PC." So at that point, Ron and I looked at each other and said, "We can finally go home because we got Tim to talk a little smack." So the trip is, that's like the red bow on it. So it was complete. It was fun. It was fun to get to hang out with the guys. The weather was sunny and cool. It had been warm the week before. It's warm this week, but it was really cool. Logistically, God was very, very kind. We had a bit of a flight delay in Denver, but that was no big deal. We had crazy early and crazy late flights, but getting on the bus, the rooms, everything went really, really smoothly, which is always itself a reason to give God thanks when you're traveling with a lot of people. As I think Tim mentioned as well, the Bob Coughlin led the singing times, which were a highlight. They always are, whether it's Shepherd's Conference or T4G. It was in the KFC Yum Center, which is where the University of Louisville plays their basketball games. So it seats probably 15,000 plus. So it was a big venue, and they were filling it with some pretty vigorous singing. In terms of takeaways, I mean, there really are a lot and a lot of good reminders. There are relatively few novel things. Most things were just reminders, but it would depend on which of the pastors you were referring to, because each of them had different things to take away. Overall, I would say sort of an undercurrent or an overarching theme would be that God honors faithfulness, particularly in light of the discussion about the celebrity pastor or not. The guys that we are, that many are signing up to go see, they're filling the seats, they want to see how they did what they did, and most of them are famous because God is honoring what they're doing and not because they're trying to be famous. And I was reminded again that God is very faithful to promote those who refuse to promote themselves. I think David Platt's attitude on the celebrity panel, as one of the celebrity pastors, he loathed that title. It just made him really, really nervous because he is one who's emphatic about, you know, what John the Baptist said in John 3:30, "I must decrease, he must increase." And that's his desire. And so, just as a brief side note, I had the opportunity to go to Europe a couple of times. And if you ever do and get to see any of the places where many of the Puritans pastored, a lot of their congregations were tiny. They had these small, many of them parish churches, and the way that they have impacted the church for so many generations is a lot of times through their writings. And they were just faithful men who showed up, served their families and their tiny flocks, and God could not possibly be more honored with their sacrifice and their faithfulness. And I think that was, however it was intended to have come across, a message that very clearly came across. In the messages proper or the panels, was that God honors faithfulness. And some men have different resources from other men. Some have different giftedness. And as diverse as the church is, it's silly for us to try to be who we are not. But but we can be faithful. And that's a takeaway that all of us can apply for sure. Other things, definitions matter. One of the discussions was about contextualization, and it actually was almost comical, because how you define the term contextualization determines whether or not it's a really good thing or not. Whether it is something that everybody does by default, like gauging an audience, not using sophisticated language when you're talking to a two-year-old, I guess, by the way some guys are viewing it, you'd call that contextualization, versus others who would take it to mean that you're actually in danger of adulterating the message for sake of a particular demographic. And that's really bad. Denominations can matter. That's one of the things that Carl Truman said, for sake of a few words in the Q&A after his session, because Dave and I went to it with Ian. He says, frankly, I'm a big fan of denominational splits, because it means that at least somebody somewhere is standing for something. And while you don't want to just take that out of its context of what he was saying, by itself, there is something to be said for that. That's pretty significant. But at the end of the day, to see how like-minded such a diverse group of people actually can be when together for the gospel is actually really, really powerful. One of the messages by Thabiti Anyabwile. So how'd I do? Yeah. I've only been working on that like nonstop for 5 days. So, by Thabiti was related to our confidence in the gospel, and a lot of our spiritual inactivity and our failure to evangelize and to be a witness for Christ to other people doesn't stem from our lack of courage. Maybe not. But a lot of times we just don't believe it's going to make a difference. We actually don't have confidence that the gospel changes lives, although our own lives testify to it. So that's convicting. And then finally, I'll just say one more. And that was related to David Platt's message, because he was the one who talked about death-defying missions and how the sovereignty of God ought to engender in the believer an unshakable confidence to go forth, because... again, God is sovereign. He's sovereign in our deaths, in our proclamation of the gospel, and so on. And he gave a good treatment to Revelation chapter 5. And the exalted Lamb is sovereign, and an unshakable confidence in his sovereignty. At least one application of that is death-defying foreign missions and domestic as well. But it has obviously lots and lots and lots of application. But for all of us, whether it is, foreign missions or something else, our confidence that God is sovereign ought to give us tremendous hope and confidence. It ought to embolden us to act and ought to make us happy. So all in all, it was a great time. Again, we thank God for all the guys who went, and just the fellowship with them. That was a blast, getting to know some of them better, and that we're back safely and ready to hit it hard. But as is often the case, when we're away on things like this, or even just away on vacation, it does, as they say, make the heart grow fonder. So it made me very, very thankful for you all, and to be here able to serve with you and to be a part of what God's doing here, because it is special. And get an opportunity to talk to some other pastors and things. It's exciting to be excited for them, and it's exciting to be excited for where you are. And so we're thankful for what he's doing here, and may he do lots more of it.
The singing was great. I would argue that if we took the 140 people from this morning and multiplied them into the number 8,000, we would have been singing 5 or 10 times as loud as the people in the Yum Center. So while it was great with 8,000 people to sing, our singing this morning was better based on the per capita of mouths and voices. So it was great, but so is it when we're singing. And this morning was a great example of that. So thanks for that encouragement, because that's ministry when you're there listening to that many voices sing, but it's also ministry to each other when we gather and we sing during our time. So that was good, but this morning was good as well. I think my favorite, well, both cherry and grape are favorites. No, I really liked and loved the attitude from pretty much everybody, speakers on through those of us who were just attendees. The attitude was fantastic. In particular, we can love what we love and love other people who love Jesus, but love some other different things as well. And that is something that we as a church have wanted to pursue and grow in ourselves, to love our doctrinal statement, to love what we believe, to love the philosophy of ministry and the various opportunities that we have in this small town, this place, and to still enjoy and love those who don't have all the same convictions. And together for the gospel and the attitude that was displayed, I can't think of any conversation that we got to watch or listen to or hear across a table in a dining room. I can't think of any conversation that did not include that same attitude. And that was fantastic. And then, as is usually the case for me, my favorite part is just being able to hang with and spend that extra time with the guys who get to go from our own church. So we don't get to hang out for 5 days at any other time. Eat together, be near each other at least in sleeping, travel together, wait around together. We all have responsibilities. We're all busy. And, of course, our families who stayed at home are the ones who made that possible, even as Ron pointed out. And we're thankful for them. I'm thankful for my wife being excited for me to go, even having just gotten done with her surgery. But being able to spend that waiting around in the airport time, either mocking each other or provoking one another to love and good deeds, is irreplaceable and impossible to overestimate its value. And again, I think I've said on Sunday mornings, totally get that not everybody can take advantage of that. I mean, guys have to take vacation days, so on and so forth. But if you are able to start planning 2 years in advance, to the degree that you can do that, Lord willing, if we could have 30, if we could have all of Men to Men just get on a plane and go hang out together for 3 or 4 or 5 days. There isn't anything like that. We just don't have those opportunities otherwise. And that's really good. I'm thankful for all the guys who are able to share tonight. Just to be able to be an encouragement and say, we're all in this together for the gospel. Don't underestimate it. Okay. Let me pray. Father, thanks for our evening tonight. Thank you for your graciousness. You keep working on us, and that's for our good. You've promised to do it. Sometimes we forget that you will, that you're going to, and yet you do. And even the life on life and the sharpening of brothers and friends and just Christian-to-Christian conversation is really good. Make this past week profitable. Whatever seeds were planted, cause them to grow, bear good fruit in the coming weeks and months, even the relationships that were strengthened. Even tonight, with the testimonies that were given, may that be an encouragement to others in our church. Thank you for blessing us as a people. Thank you for giving us life. Help us grow more and more into that life as we follow your Son and trust the evangel, the gospel. And we pray in his name. Amen.